This is KRCU's Going Public, and I'm Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson. As we count down the remaining weeks of 2016, yeah, I know, it's about that time, it's only fitting to do some reflecting on the media. If you've been following the latest headlines and what's been trending on social media, it's fair to say that 2016 has been a rough year for the media. With this new administration coming in, the big question is, where do we go from here? Recently, I spoke with Dr. Tamara Zellers-Buck, an associate professor from the Department of Mass Media here at Southeast, to talk about it. So it's been a pretty rough year for the media. There's been the fake news scandal that broke during the election and in recent time. There's been the constant battle between Donald Trump and the media. And there is this obvious distrust between the media and the audience that they serve. What do you make of all of this?
We've just got a big old mess, to put it really bluntly. Wow. There are so many people talking at the same time right now and all using these same platforms and having access to these same platforms. And we have chaos. And somebody is going to have to come in and make order out of this thing, because right now the chaos is winning. And nobody is getting anything done.
How do we start that? How do we start that process? This is something that, you know, it's different for journalism. During our most recent presidency with Barack Obama, social media was just now starting to come around. And so this is a whole new type of thing that the media is trying to figure out.
Well, you know, I think a part of it is that in the past, there have always been some bedrock organizations, institutions. There have always been some clear leaders in our industry. And we don't have that right now. We don't have the Edward R. Murrows. We don't have the Walter Cronkites. We don't even have the Dan Rathers, those people who step out and they are sort of the voice of reason. They're the leaders of our institutions. We don't have the Washington Post early 1900s, or the New York, yeah, you know, we don't have those major institutions that are clearly at the forefront and they're setting the tone. Right now, everyone's scrambling because they're all trying to access this new platform, which is not new anymore, but the access has leveled the playing field.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the problem, because the access is that everyone has to social media, to the internet, has leveled the playing field. No one has been able to step out and say, here's how you do it, and we're going to take the lead on this, and everyone agrees and follows them. So it's just a cacophony of voices, and everybody wants to be the leader, and so no one is.
With the playing field being leveled, you have President-elect Donald Trump, who, since the beginning of him entering into this political cycle, has been using Twitter, and that has been his main form of communication with not only his audience, but also the media. And now that he will be our next president, that's kind of what their relationship has been. Tweets like against each other, and a lot of fact checking between those tweets, things that are inaccurate. Is Donald Trump manipulating the media?
I think it's clear that he's manipulating the media, and it's because we are a little unsure ourselves of how it works. And this is the problem with new technology and people not embracing it. Had our organizations, had our professionals embraced Twitter when it first became popular, we would have a handle on how to utilize it better and how to confront the government, which is our role as news organizations. We've sort of not figured out how to do that because we wanted to stay with the old. Oh, it's Twitter will pass. Well, clearly Twitter didn't pass, you know. And he has figured out how to lead the discussion as opposed to us leading the mm-hmm. discussion, which is what we're used to. And let's face it, 140 characters makes it really difficult to express yourself completely. And it would be ridiculous to say you need twice that many characters. So trying to take these major complex ideas and whittle them down to 140 characters of communication, that's worse than a soundbite. You know, and he's doing that, and he's getting things wrong, and we're just so busy pointing at he's getting it wrong, he missed this fact, that we're not paying attention to the overarching idea that's involved. It's a mess. You know, we've got to figure out what's the best way to share information, even using Twitter as a forum. And it's not constantly bickering about individual facts. That's not the way we do business. It never has been. We have to analyze. We have to explain the bigger picture. And if we don't figure out how to get a handle on that in Twitter, he's going to continue to manipulate the conversation. And what happens when a political leader leads the conversation and all you do is follow, as a news organization, is you're spreading propaganda. So we're dealing with spreading propaganda as opposed to doing our jobs and explaining the news value of each issue.
When we're talking about a Donald Trump presidency and how journalists are going to cover it, we have to talk about terminology, and that is something that many newsrooms have been having conversations about. And one of those topics is the concept of the alt-right. And according to the Southern Poverty Law Center, they say it's a set of far-right ideologies, groups, and individuals whose core belief is that white identity is under attack by multicultural forces using political correctness and social justice to undermine white people and their civilization. Now, this term alt-right was started by Richard Bertrand Spencer in 2008. He heads a white nationalist group. But the term became kind of like this mainstream thing thanks to Stephen Bannon, who has ties to Breitbart News. It's a conservative news organization. And it's also important to mention here that he is the chief strategist for Donald Trump. And some news organizations are not going along with using the term alt-right. They're using terms like white supremacy or white nationalism group. And one newsroom in particular, KUOW, it's an NPR member station in Seattle, said they're not going to use the term alt-right because they don't believe there is a clear and defined separation between old groups of that nature and this one. And also because it was confusing their audience. So what is your take on this whole terminology debate that we're having?
It's politically correct to say alt-right. I think that it pretties it up, but it's not supposed to be pretty. When we think about it, I agree. There is no real separation between the ideology of that organization or those people who fall under that ideology and the white supremacists of old. If you did a line-by-line comparison, I bet that they would fall completely in line. So if we're going to call it that, let's call it that. If their ideology at its base is white supremacy, that is a term that is much more recognizable, that is much more appropriate in terms of understanding for an audience. And that's one that should be used. It's nicer to hear alt-right because you didn't miss the actual message. You didn't miss the actual message, but I think the message is important in that term.
But when it comes to fact-checking, that is something, accuracy, that is one of those news values that is utmost important. How do journalists fact-check while still leading the conversation and not being led by a different type of conversation? If that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, it makes sense. I think that we, as journalists, are going to have to do them both simultaneously. And that's possible. You know, we have, for years, we have run sidebar stories. Or for years, we have taken a paragraph in the midst of a bigger conversation to explain something. We can still do that. You know, one of the first things we teach our students, though, is you don't repeat the error.
Everything's a lie.
Right.
You know, you don't believe it until you fact check
it. You fact check it. You don't repeat the error. Once you've got, you know, you just explain what's the accurate part of the thing. You don't repeat the error because then people may miss a part of the conversation. What we're doing, though, is we're almost nitpicking. we're so busy saying you missed this fact, you missed this fact, that we're not explaining why all of this is important in the first place.
Context.
Context is everything.
Will we ever find the context?
I'm hopeful. I'm always going to be optimistic about our industry. And what I think is that we're just on tilt right now. And at some point, we're going to find our counterbalance, hopefully sooner rather than later. And once we do that, I think everybody's going to be a little more comfortable. Our problem is, however, though, that we've been getting it wrong a lot. You know, we have been, as professionals, falling for the okey-doke and allowing people to mislead us because we are not fact-checking. We aren't being properly trained, perhaps. We are allowing people into our industry who have not been trained. We're being usurped by these fragmented organizations on the side who somehow develop a following, cult or otherwise, and they begin to gain standing in the conversation and get a seat at the table. All of those things together marginalize us, those of us who are trained, those of us who are legitimate journalists. So we've got to retake our ship, you know, as it were. We need to retake our ship and own up to our mistakes and then demonstrate that we are deserving of the public's trust by getting it right again and again and again. So we've got to raise our standards.
We have been throwing the term mainstream media out, and it is a term that is used a lot. The mainstream media. Who is the mainstream media? Who are they?
That's a great question. And today, with the fragmentation that has happened in media markets, it's hard to point a finger at it. In the past, we could say, oh, the mainstream media are those major organizations, news organizations that are in print, that are in broadcast media. But now there are six corporations that own probably 80% of all the media that's out there. So the mainstream media is certainly them. You know, and what's interesting about that is those mainstream organizations cover every platform. Mm-hmm. And they involve much more than just traditional, quote unquote, white news. You know, they own the Griot. They own the Root. They own mm-hmm. Telemundo. So they own what we think of as minority or alternative organizations, but they're owned by the Big Six. So they're controlling the conversations in those minority organizations. So I would argue that Donald Trump is a part of the mainstream media.
What do you mean by that?
What binds all of these organizations and makes them similar is the fact that they have major audiences, large anonymous audiences. That's what mass media is about, taking complex messages and delivering them to a large anonymous audience. He has billions of people following him. You know, so, I would argue that in some ways he is a part of quote unquote the media. And so he has some responsibilities also when he talks about himself. When he talks about the media, I think he's also talking about himself. And so when he makes these large, broad, sweeping statements that are largely inaccurate, he's delivering misinformation as much as any news organization that he likes to complain about.
Well, we had this conversation way before the election happened, before we learned that Donald Trump would be our president, about the mainstream media, their role and how they cover these stories. And now, since one of the conflicts is media versus the audience they serve, some who are not necessarily with the mainstream media, those who are more or less on the right side of the spectrum, say that we don't trust the media, the liberal media. You're stirring up racism. You're stirring up all these things by talking about it. Has the mainstream media, because they were so slow to the conversation of reporting on these stories, have they kind of been served up what's due to them as far as their response from the audience, where they just don't want to hear it because they've been kind of late to the conversation that's been going on for a while?
I think so. I think in the 1970s, when the mainstream organizations actually first began looking at diversity within the newsrooms and looking at diversity in our news coverage, we recognized then that there was a problem. And then we said, we're going to try and fix it. We're going to aim at increasing our diversity in leadership, diversity in story coverage, diversity in personnel, so that we can do a better job of covering these issues. And then we realized that we weren't doing a very good job. About 25 years later, we were like, we're nowhere near our benchmarks. We're not doing a very good job. And rather than really becoming more aggressive, what we did was push back the deadline, which made us late to the conversation. Because in the same time, the populace was starting to move on these issues, on diversity issues. So our delays as a industry in getting involved have hurt us. And now we're starting to see, now we're saying, oh, let's talk about this. Let's be aggressive in covering these issues. Let's bring in diversity by owning new organizations and starting those conversations. And everyone is angry, because what happens is, when we don't do our jobs well, we have a multi-generational impact. We also set up these groups as threats. And this is something you and I talked about before. Mm-hmm. You set these groups up as threats, and then there's a spark. And when that spark happens, we're the ones that get burned. Society burns, sure, but we get burned because we could have prevented it. We could have certainly diluted it. So now we are getting a little bit of what we deserve, but it will be up to us to fix it.
What about the reporters who are minorities? I mean, it's going to be a challenge covering Donald Trump, where some of his supporters, not all, but some, have said and done things that, from a moral perspective, many would not agree with. Where do journalists of color, journalists who believe differently, wear different things that symbolize that belief, where do they go from here?
Well, I hope that a good number of those people stay in those mainstream newsrooms, because their voices are needed now more than ever. More than ever before, we need them to challenge the internal processes, challenge the internal gatekeepers, and keep them honest. We need them to be able to be sure that minority viewpoints are still heard. So those goals from the 70s of increasing personnel, increasing personnel diversity and management diversity and viewpoint diversity, hugely important right now. At the same time, they're going to have to worry about their personal safety, because there are people out there who have been emboldened enough that they are actually threatening our minorities who are in newsrooms. I'm reading about that almost on a daily basis now. Minorities who are receiving personal and physical threats because they have a voice in those newsrooms. And it takes a strong person to stay in place when that happens. But we saw it with Ida B. Wells. You know, we've seen some people who were able to withstand it and know that their voice was important enough that they had to stay in the fight. So I hope that many of them will stay in the newsrooms, in those mainstream newsrooms. But I'm also hoping to see a comeback on minority press. I want to see that 20% grow their audiences, because there's always a place for minority press. And minority press has the independence to speak out when the mainstream doesn't. So I want to see that grow. I would love to see the Chicago Defender take hold again. The St. Louis American, organizations like that. Mm-hmm. I want to see them get on the main stage also.
That's our show. A special thanks to my guest, Dr. Tamara Zellers-Buck, an associate professor from the Department of Mass Media at Southeast Missouri State University. You can find our conversation on the role of the media in a Donald Trump presidency and our previous conversations on the media on our website at krcu.org, or find us on iTunes to hear this podcast. I'm Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson. Join us next week for another edition of KRCU's Going Public.